Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Wine Time with Peggy show, featuring Peggy Fiandaca, who along with her winemaker husband, Kurt Lawrence Dunham, owns and operates LDV Winery in Arizona. So everybody, this is very exciting. Nancy and I just drove from North Carolina to Southern Arizona, and we're on our way to Tucson, but of course, we kept saying on Wine Time with Peggy shows that we're coming to visit, and we finally made it. Mm-hmm. And we had to, right, Nancy? Because it's 15 years they are celebrating of making some of the best wine on the planet. And we were here last night. We finally got to meet Kurt,
yes,
the man
I'm here.
Behind the wine.
I really exist.
You do exist. And by the way, he makes some killer brownies.
Mm-hmm.
They are quite magical, aren't they?
Been told that before.
Yes, yeah. They're magical. And he made a killer dinner. With amazing pairings that with made really perfectly with the wine. So we've been here overnight, and now we're in the actual winery itself, and Peggy is here.
Yes.
Of course Peggy is here. It's
of
Wine
course.
Time with Peggy. And we had an amazing drive in. So again, as we talk about on the shows, the actual tasting room is in Scottsdale, and it's busy. It's busy season.
It is busy season. Finally, after a hot summer, it's cooling off, and the patio is calling a lot of people to come wine.
Well, you know, while we've been here, you've had one phone call after the other. I'm going, Peggy, this is a little rude. Apparently, you're doing business, you know. Charcuterie classes, groups.
Yeah, we just had Halloween pumpkin painting on class, and we have cork crafting coming up. And
Cork crafting.
You can do wreaths or Christmas trees or ornaments or bird houses, whatever you want with corks.
I thought Nancy would just say, cork it, Lisa, you know.
Yeah.
Cork it. Get corked. But anyway, no, nothing stays corked around us for so long,
no.
You know. But
no.
But yeah, and do you have a lot of holiday events coming up?
We have a lot of holiday events. And of course, Scottsdale is all decked out for the holidays. And they have a canal convergence coming up that in November this month, and it's an art-focused, interactive art event, which is fabulous.
Cool.
People need to visit sometime.
That's awesome. And here being at the vineyard, we feel like we hit the jackpot.
Mm-hmm.
We drove in after a long drive through Texas, just saying. We got here, and we took a dirt road in through Fort Bowie National Monument. And Fort Bowie, history lovers, this is a must go to. It is one of the most important places in the desert Southwest in regards to the Indian American Wars. The Apache passes there. The Apache Wars happened. Geronimo got captured. We're in the Cochise stronghold. The Butterfield stage route goes through there, all at the same place. It converges all in one place. You can go to the graveyard and see where Geronimo's, I think it's his fourth grandson, is buried. Also, it is a beautiful nature area with mountains and yuccas, and it's gorgeous. So we drove in through there, revisited Fort Bowie, and we'll put a link in the show notes to our video of Fort Bowie with a park ranger talking about it. Came out, saw all kinds of cattle, quail, deer.
Mm-hmm.
The sun was starting to set. Then we went past the entrance to Chiricahua National Monument, so you know what we're doing next. And then we arrived at the vineyard, and you can only come here at special events or by appointment, right?
Correct.
Okay, so then you could meet Kurt. You could be lucky, right?
You might. That's your opinion, whether you're lucky or not, but I'll be here.
But you also had campers here.
Yeah, Harvest Host.
Harvest Host. So this is for people that are self-contained.
Correct. They can come. If you're a member of Harvest Host, you can make a reservation online and stay on the vineyard and do a wine tasting with Kurt and buy some wine. It's just a fun
time. Did you hear that? Buy some wine. And then when I talk about self-contained, we all like to be self-contained units, but this is if you're an RVer, right?
Right, right.
So
I mean, they were hooked up to our electric power through an extension cord.
Oh, well, that's because a lot of people don't get that. So.
But, yeah, we usually don't. We hope that you're self-contained. But, yeah, they are traveling across the country from North Carolina and having a great time.
Awesome. See, that's what's going on. So we were the next North Carolinians coming in. And
2 in 1 day.
I know, right? But we don't have the accent.
No, you don't.
We don't.
They didn't either.
They
were from Pittsburgh and Jacksonville.
Oh, wow.
And they met in Charlotte.
Oh, well,
halfway.
Hey, there you go. But and North Carolina's got a bustling new wines. Well, it's not new, but they went from moonshine to wine.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So it's cool to, for them to go to another wine country. So they were here. Sun was setting, and we had a wine tasting, but we also could see the vineyards and woke up this morning to frost. So, Kurt, tell us a little bit, what is it like now for what's going on in the vineyard for people to understand kind of that cycle of seasons?
Yeah, we're winding down the 2023 growing season, and winding down means all the fruit's in, and we're getting the vines prepared for their winter nap. They go to sleep just like an oak tree. The leaves turn brown, they fall off, and then in the spring they blossom out again. So what we do is we want to make sure they have a nice resting period and are all excited about waking up next year and making great grapes.
So you took me around on the gator. I got to go on the gator. And you're telling me, you know, they need a nap because you've worked them hard.
Yeah, they've been busting it for 6 months, and it's time for them to get a little break. And unfortunately, the winemaker doesn't tend to get one of those, but I don't complain too much about it.
Because he has to cook, too.
Yeah, I got to cook, too. But right now, we're... We just did an inventory of the vineyard to see where we had some skips. So the plants die periodically. A healthy plant will live 30 to 35 years, and ours are about between 10 and 13 years now. But you do get dieback, just like a rose will just die for no reason. And you wonder, oh, is something wrong? No, it just...
It's tired now.
It went down like that 40-year-old marathon runner that just dies mysteriously. They just go... And so each year we go in and we inventory where we need to put baby plants in the spring.
Okay.
And you have to order them ahead of time. So we do that at the end of the growing season because there's the plants that are alive are still green. Mm-hmm. The plants that didn't make it are not green anymore.
Okay.
So we know by just looking which ones need to be pulled out and replaced.
So that's a lot of acreage that we went through of vineyards. So how many acres?
We have 13 acres of grapes.
Do you go in the gator and you just go and start counting? And
yep, you go up and down each row and you evaluate the row and all the plants, and then you make a call, this one's okay or this one needs to be replaced.
So when you get your new babies in, do you know exactly where they go? Because you mark, okay, this is this vineyard at this section.
Yeah, and we'll be digging the holes for them over the winter.
Oh, that's smart.
So when the babies arrive, they've already got their little place to go.
Do you name the babies?
1,200 of them? No. I have a hard enough time remembering Peggy's name sometimes. So add 1,200 of that.
It's good wine. It's good wine. Well, I was going to say, too, with them being babies coming in, are they going to come in like bare roots, or do they have leaves when they come in?
Nope, they're bare root. They're about 18 inches tall, and then the root is grafted to the bottom. So we use specific root stock that's good for our terroir and our terrain and our soils. And then we choose the varietal, which is the type of grape, whether it's Syrah, Petite Syrah, Grenache, that's grafted onto the root stock. So all of our 13,000 plants have the same root stock, but they all have different grape varietals
on top. Oh,
well,
so you're grafting it.
It's like, who's your daddy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much like roses, if you know anything about roses.
Yeah, yeah.
There are rose root stocks that are preferred by many. Mm-hmm. And then you graft the type of rose, whether it's a Lincoln rose or a John F. Kennedy or whatever you're looking for, from a color and size profile, you graft that to the root stock.
So it's also like fruit trees, they do that. It's like,
yes,
here, I can have
a
peach and a plum on the same tree.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a fig tree up in Phoenix that's got three different kinds of figs on it.
Wow. Well, that's cool, man. So it's weird science.
And, it is.
And to be in here surrounded, by the way, we are like in a wine cave.
It's very tempting.
I could put my bed here.
Yeah,
okay.
You could.
This is amazing. Look at all this wine.
Yes, yes. And we've had a lot of the wine go out the door because we had, October was our wine club, new releases. But we still have plenty for the holidays.
With
Thanksgiving coming up, we have plenty of great wine for you. And then the holidays, and we can ship now.
Oh, that's
that
right. We're in shipping season.
Yes, we're in shipping season.
That's exciting. Is there a timeline that people need to know, like for, you know, their holiday dinner table, and if you want to gift things? What is like the deadline?
You need to give us a week to make sure that it gets to you before like Thanksgiving.
And also depending on where you live. I mean, Arizona, Western United States, it takes about 4 or 5 days once the shipment leaves to get to Maine or Massachusetts. We have wine club members in Maine, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so that takes almost a week to get over there. So depending on where you're located, back that off your timetable.
So get ordering, basically.
Yeah, really get on it.
One other thing that, Kurt, you might want to talk about is what we're doing to our soils to make sure that they're augmented in preparation for the spring.
Yeah, we give them a shot of nutrients this time of year, and we also introduce some microbes into the soil that helps the plant to uptake that food. Mm. And so we let that go in right before they go dormant. Mm-hmm. And so they're in this good environment. So when they wake up, everything's going to be happy. That's what we're hoping for.
So it's like they're little vitamins.
Yeah, exactly like vitamins.
Mm. Okay, cool. Wine vitamins. We need that.
Yes.
Yeah. We need that. Okay, so here we are. So yesterday we tasted the Viognier. Oh, the Grenache, the rosé. I'm telling you that rosé... I swear it's the best rosé we've had.
Yeah.
Like, really, that rosé for everyone's holiday table, I think it went perfectly with the pork tenderloin. Mm-hmm. Everything went well. And then the Petite Sirah with the brownies. And the balsamic, tell everybody about that.
Yes, cherry balsamic, wonderful.
I had no idea that would go.
Drizzle it on chocolate, amazing. Mm. Or you could have done that pork tenderloin with a cherry balsamic finish. Amazing. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, this is good. So tell
us
about this.
Everybody's getting hungry.
I know. I'm like, okay, we're going to have dinner all over again.
So we're getting ready to finish up our 2022 Viognier. We have, of course, harvested in it in 2022, so it's about a year old now.
Okay.
And the year on the bottle is the year the grapes were grown, not when the wine was finished. Yeah. That's the vintage. That's when the grapes were grown. So... this wine will have a 2022 label on it because that's where the grapes came from. But we've been aging it in several different vessels. We've aged some of it in stainless steel because we don't want it to have any outside influence. We just want that fermented juice that reflects our mountain terroir and is a true reflection of the grapes that year. But we also, to accentuate the experience, offer some oaked types of Viognier, which we'll try after this one. You don't want to try the oaked after this one because the oak will become much more prevalent in your palate. You want to taste this one nice and fresh.
We're going to do the stainless, right?
This is the stainless.
Okay.
Well, and it might stay like this until it's bottled, or it might go into something else. That's what we're trying to determine now, what the final wines are going to be from that vintage.
How often do you get to sample?
I don't very often. I smell.
Okay.
I trust my nose a lot more than
Nancy tells
than my
me
palate.
I smell too.
Yeah.
Especially on one trip.
That sounds like something that you two can share. count me out. Count me out.
Well, we do have our sock monkey Priscilla, and she does smell.
Okay.
You're using your nose for.
Yeah, I can usually tell when something's going on you don't want in the wine.
Oh, wow.
We also rack the wine, which means we pull the clarified wine out of the vessel, whatever it is, either stainless or barrel, and leave the sediment behind. And every time we do that, I always do a full sensory analysis of the wine. But as far as going in, a lot of winemakers taste their wine a lot. I don't like to do that very often because I think it gets in your head. Mm-hmm. And it can cause you to panic because the wine changes every time you taste it. And if you taste it all the time, I think if you taste it a lot, you lose that change perspective because it's gradual on you.
Okay.
But if you taste it a lot, you also remember what it was like last time and it's changed and you think something's wrong. No, it's just... it's wine. It's doing its thing.
Also, like Nancy as an artist... when you get too close to your painting, you need to sometimes walk away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you overpaint.
Yes.
You have to learn when to stop.
You can oversniff and you can overtaste. Yeah. And I trust my instincts on what we've decided my protocols are for how wine is developing. Mm-hmm. And so far, I think it's been pretty successful.
Well, that's amazing to just know... I mean, to develop those senses, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you both love wine and have been, you know, wine enthusiasts for years before you did this and traveled and all of that. But to truly develop those senses and then to go, I trust my senses. Like,
correct.
I that's hard not to be a basket case, because I would be the basket case. Like,
well, there's a lot of times we are too.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But then I go, I've got all this wine around me. Who cares?
Yeah. No,
and I would overtaste because, yeah, look, there's all this wine. Like, how could you not want to just over? No, I'm just kidding. But
so what, know, I want you to do is really swirl it. And this wine, because we
do
just,
I have legs?
Yeah. If you're doing good, and then really get a good sniff and put your whole nose into the wine glass to understand what you're picking up in terms of the aromas.
So, for everyone, would you like me to snort for for your podcast sensories?
And then, if you take your first sip and let it really roll around in your mouth before you swallow it. And see how it hits all the sensory points in your mouth. And you might get something up front, which is, mm-hmm, I get like a grapefruit.
See, almost. I was getting apple. Mm-hmm. Like my smell was like green apple.
Yeah.
And then that was like the first thing. So I was wondering if my nose and tongue would match.
You know, sometimes you want that, sometimes you don't.
Right.
If they don't match, makes you think, and that makes for an interesting wine.
Mm.
And we call it beguiling.
Oh, we got a good
term.
Like,
I can't figure this one out, but I like it.
And maybe the next time you'll taste something different. So it's like listening to a new album, you hear it the first time, and then the next time you hear all different something instruments, different, a different part of a melody. Yeah,
very much so.
Yeah, wine and music go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I like this. Mm-hmm. This is, it's Fred. Like,
it's very fresh.
Hello, here. It's perky.
On the finish, there's a little bit of peach on the finish.
Yeah,
I think.
Because I was thinking a little butterscotchy.
Yeah, maybe.
Possible. Yeah, everybody's palate's a little bit different. Yeah. Nobody's right.
Yeah, see, it's like art. That's the thing. Winemaking is an art.
Yeah.
Yes,
it is. But the Viognier typically will have several different dominant components to it.
Mm.
One is that citrusy.
Mm-hmm.
It can have that citrus note, grapefruit, lemon, lime.
See, I'm tasting that more now.
You can also pick up some tropical fruit like pineapple or guava.
Mm.
Oh.
And then the finish, you can often pick up stone fruit like pear or peach or apricot.
Ooh.
So the vintage pretty much tells you, once the wine is finished, what that plot of ground out there gave me to work with. And then my job is to not screw it up. And accentuate those lovely qualities that are coming out of the vineyard through how we age the wine, what we age the wine in, how we blend the wine and produce the wine.
Do you talk to your vineyard, your plants?
No.
You don't?
No. I'm not ready for being committed yet. Okay. So
Peggy
does.
So she's ready to be committed.
Okay. I was out there driving around in the Gator talking to all the plants and thanking them for an incredible 2023 harvest.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, there's something about it. It's like it's part of the land. And that's why I was talking about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the beauty of this is you've got like it's almost short grass prairie land out here, which people don't expect Arizona to have.
Right.
The mountains. Mm-hmm. And then you have all the little creeks and cienegas out here, which does that make it different, the fact that you have water out here? You know, is it a cienega? I haven't been home for a while. Is it a cienega or is that New Mexico?
No, that's
the bosque.
Kind of an arroyo or a riparian area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got owls.
We have one right along the edge of the vineyard. It's called Ash Creek, and it's 600 feet wide. So it's a major drainage way from the Chiricahuas. So we'll get snow melt and rain coming down that. But also, because it's a little bit lower because of the erosion over the millions of years, it creates a drainage way for air.
Mm.
And that can be very advantageous for a winery or a vineyard to have that air movement that's not around it if it wasn't next to that riparian
area. So it's like having a little fan.
Yeah. Kind of like that.
Or like a wind tunnel takes
typically bring in warm air from in the wintertime to keep the vineyard from getting too cold, but also brings in cool air off the mountain in the summertime. So we'll get cold air seeping down there, and then it comes into the vineyard and cools down the grapes. We picked grapes this year at 56 degrees.
Wow.
Which in September, which has never happened before. And a lot of it has to do with that drainage, cold air drainage that we have.
But that's how those microclimates happen, right? So
exactly.
That's why, like, a vineyard around the corner from you will not have the same.
Exactly.
Because that's of that, you know, and like when you hike in the desert, you can tell. It could be in the summer, I don't care when it is. You can tell if you're in a wash or an arroyo because of the temperature cooling down immediately where you are. And that's where all the birds and everybody can check out, like, who to hunt if they're up at the top. But I think your area is really unique. I mean,
yeah, and that's a great definition of microclimate. I mean, just a few hundred yards, the soil changes from this place. The creek is not there 100 yards to the north. All those things play into what this place does, and it's quite unique.
Does it change for you what varietal you're going to plant near the creek?
We did not look into that. We planted the varietals based on what we thought would do best here. The proximity of the creek, I mean, there's probably no way to estimate how far the creek influence goes into the vineyard.
Yeah.
But pretty much I have weather stations around, and it's pretty uniform throughout the property, the temperatures and wind flows and those kinds of things.
But the closer to the creek, the soils change. So they're a little bit more sandy loam as you get closer to the creek versus our volcanic soil and volcanic rock that's in our vineyard.
Yeah, that's totally, the soil by the creek is totally different because the vineyard's planted in volcanic material. It's dust, it's ash, it's decomposed rhyolite granite. Where the creek has run since that volcano erupted, that's all gone. And you're left with the silt of a waterway.
Wow.
So just across the driveway, you go from red rhyolite granite soil to basically beach sand.
Wow. Wow, it's different, man.
Yeah.
It's different. So what did, when you did the nosy thing to your
the nosy thing,
what did you pick up in your nose?
I pick up kind of a sweet crab apple.
Yeah, so
the
there's
nose.
An apple. That's it.
And I'm also picking up a little bit of maybe some pineapple on the nose.
Now I'm tasting a teeny bit at the end, lemon.
Yeah. Okay.
Very light. Not like the lemony lemon. Maybe more, not even lime.
Orange.
It's kind of a, it's a new type of citrus that I'm creating myself.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's my own varietal.
Yeah.
A lorange, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
Lime orange.
Hey, that sounds
that's
good.
A good one.
Yeah, I mean, I've grafted it myself. But it's interesting about, you know, crab apple, because I'm going green apple. That was my first impression. And then I'm like, no, it's still a little sweeter and lighter. So you have to kind of think of all the apple varieties.
Yeah.
And crab apples, we used to pick those in England. We used to have them in England.
Yep.
We'd go crab appling.
Crab appling.
So, Kurt, what would you do with this wine? What's the next step to this wine?
Well, when we taste the ones that have been aged in barrel, we'll get a profile of the different options we have. From unoaked, which is what we're holding now, to ones that were aged in brand new French oak barrels, which are going to have the most influence on the wine. So we'll taste those different levels of barrel along with this and try to come up with some combinations of which wines we like the best. We may have three different bottlings coming from this vintage. We might have one, we might have two, and we might have four. So we just don't know. We're just now to the point now a year in where I think the wine is showing what it can be.
Wow.
Up until that point, it's still kind of like a gawky teenager. It's starting to grow up now. And so I think we can start to really look at it critically to see what's going to end up in your bottle.
It takes a lot of patience.
No sneaking out.
It does take
a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would be checking it every day. What are you tasting like today?
Yeah.
You can go insane.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah.
But there's a science to this, which I think is fascinating. And looking forward and patience, like Nancy said, the patience to doing this. Like, I would be like, come on, come on, come on.
I know.
I'd be like a little cheerleader, except for I can't jump around like that. okay. You know. But no, I would be like, really, come on, babies, let's do it. You know, you can do it. But now when you do the tasting and figure out, okay, it's time to bottle, it's time to do this, is it you and Peggy making those decisions? Do you have other people saying, like, you know, when people, you know, music or authors will have people like a beta taste tester, beta taster.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you have beta? Are there such things?
We
beta tasters?
Love to pull together what we call a tasting panel. Mm-hmm. And it's not only Peggy part of that, a huge mm-hmm. part of that. And I kind of just watch people to get their reactions to it, because I already know more about the wine than they'll ever know.
Right.
Not because I'm smarter, because I've been with
it since
it was out there in the field.
Right. Yeah.
So, but we like to bring in club members mm-hmm. who have some wine knowledge and are familiar with our terroir, and they understand what our wines are all about. I like to bring in professionals. Mm. Sommelier or winemaker from another winery.
Mm.
I like to bring in novices. Mm. And you ask them different questions. If you have a sommelier on your panel, you can get very technical with them.
Mm-hmm.
The like wine club members say, how would you compare this to last year's vintage?
Yeah.
And they tell you. The novice, you say, do you like it or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's important.
And that's as good of information as any, because a novice is probably going to be drinking this wine.
Yeah. But and that's the thing. I think we have new generations of wine enthusiasts now, and I think they've been excluded from going, you know, it's kind of felt pushed out for many years, but I think that was like 10, 20 years ago. But now it's the wine industry has changed and been very more inclusive of people walking into a tasting room. I know we've talked about this a lot, going, I have no clue about wine. And you know what? I think going to a tasting room, if that's your first time drinking wine, I think going to a tasting room for a winery, whether it's at the actual vineyard or not, is actually probably better than just buying a bottle off a shelf, going, ooh, that's a cute label. Sorry, guilty. And not knowing anything I like it or I don't. But having that background and understanding of what goes into winemaking and having someone, because your tasting room staff can explain stuff.
Absolutely. So what we, in our tasting room, when we have a novice or even someone that really knows something about the wine, we're not trying to tell them what they're tasting. We're trying to help them describe what they're tasting. Mm-hmm. So, and to talk about, like Kurt did, with what a typical Viognier might have, the characteristics, help them understand that and see what they're tasting in the wine and if they like it or what they don't like about it. So we're not necessarily telling you what you're drinking. We're helping you define what you're drinking.
But that's the joy of tasting wine, is going, what is this? Right. Slowing down, not guzzling your wine, just going, ooh, this is, I taste this, I taste that. And you're right, it changes as you're sipping and testing it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And it's okay if you don't like it.
Yeah.
It's not that it's a bad wine, it's just
not your palate.
Not your palate. And that's okay also. And that's the beauty of wine tasting, is that you get to try multiple wines, and you can determine what you like and what you don't like. And that'll help you when you do go to the grocery store to look for the wine that you might want.
Well, it's also, I think it changes too. As
Absolutely.
Your palate changes, you know what I mean? It's like we didn't, as kids, I didn't like coffee, but now give me coffee.
Yeah.
And it's important.
Yeah.
It's important, just like wine. It's like, ew, how could you drink wine? Oh, let me tell you how and why. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you change, and like the white wines, I mean, you guys really, the Viognier, I think, is amazing.
Yeah.
White wines are really good. I think, I don't know why is it so hard to get good white wines? I think America's done a better job, but like we always gravitate towards South Africa, New Zealand, white wines. What is it?
You know, I think a lot of it is protocol. White wine is very, very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the natural protectants in it like a resveratrol and tannins that a red wine does.
Okay. Mm.
So if you make a mistake with white wine, everybody knows it.
It's a little more acid-like.
It's going to have a lower pH.
Okay.
Which is what the perception is in your mouth of the acid versus base.
I thought it would have been more.
Huh? And so you're going to get that acid. If not, white wine would be flat and it would be undrinkable. It would not be good.
Yeah.
But you can make a lot more mistakes with white. White's scary. If I was to be a busybody and had to check on something every day, it'd be the whites.
Okay.
The red guys, they're off doing their thing.
Mellow.
They're okay. They'll be fine. They're chilled. You know, they're chilling out. They're fine. The whites are more volatile. Mm. And I think that the whites, since a lot of them are not oaked or very little oaked, you're not masking anything that's wrong with them.
Mm.
And so I think that there's a... The red wine can have some camouflage by what you do.
So there's
to
a
it.
Transparency to these. In
yeah,
the
this
white.
Is not just visually transparent, but also more transparent on the palate.
Mm. So, you know, the wine term for today.
Oh, I know. I was waiting for her to bring it up because she's been excited. She wanted to start with the wine term.
Yep.
Because the last wine term was settling.
Right.
And I thought it was about sitting on the couch with a good glass of wine. Which kind of did
that
last time. We had, you know, dinner with a good glass of wine. So we did settle. We did do settling.
Good.
So now today, good. What I think we're going to go to jail. We're going to jail.
Yep. Because we're going to transition from a Viognier that's in the glass to a Viognier that's been in oak. And we use a thief, which is called, it's a mechanism that you use to put in the bung hole. I've taught you about the bung hole on a barrel of
not
wine.
Not be confused with the
cornhole. Well, I would say they're similar, but okay, sorry.
So, and we use this device to put
I'll,
in.
I'll never see that again. I can't get rid of that.
I can't now. You
destroyed me.
I'm sorry, but now that we have to do the bunghole.
All of our wines are now going into stainless steel tanks.
She did
the
this.
Are out.
She did the bunghole on purpose.
Yes. So you use the thief, which is, we have a glass thief, and you can have a plastic.
We're going with plastic.
Plastic
today.
Thief.
The glass doesn't bend.
Okay. And you that's how you remove wine out of the barrel through the bunghole.
That needs to be bent.
Because there's no spout on the barrel, and it's 650 pounds, so you can't turn it over and dump some out in your
Oh,
glass.
We don't want any
so
drama.
Spillage. The wine thief is the only way to go.
Okay, well let's go and Priscilla, our pink sock monkey, can be the getaway driver.
There you
okay.
go.
And the gator. Sounds
yeah, we
good.
Always, we
Let's
always need
thief.
One of those.
Okay, so we played thievery. We took the thieving tool, stuck it in the bunghole, and sucked up some new Viognier in the barrel.
I would have put it differently.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that sounded really gross. But
okay.
what we did is we extracted...
Okay.
Some wine in development into a beautiful shiny glass.
Well done.
You're,
would you like to write for the magazine?
Yeah. Love to.
Yeah. Especially on your article.
You're making him nervous.
What no, we have here, cool. we have the same juice that we just had, mm-hmm. same vintage, same field, same knucklehead winemaker, except the knucklehead winemaker put it into oak barrel.
Okay.
And the oak barrel is a 2-year-old French oak barrel, which means it's had 2 vintages run through it.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like if a new French oak barrel is a brand new loafer, this one's been walked in for a while. So it's not nearly
experienced
as pungent in flavor because the flavor gets leached out of the barrel the more times you use it.
Okay.
Oh.
So this is a lighter barrel application. You're going to pick up some barrel, but the important thing is, and you notice the color of it.
Yeah.
What you get from a barrel is called transpiration. The barrel actually breathes, and it emits moisture.
Mm.
And as that moisture is emitted, the wine concentrates. And if you've ever boiled down chicken broth,
right.
the more liquid you take out of it, the more intense the broth becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Same thing with wine.
Oh.
So this has been in a barrel, whereas that first one had no evaporation because it's a steel closed environment.
Mm-hmm.
This one is in the barrel, and so it's been extracted for a year. And also the barrel gives a little bit of color, but most of that is from the extraction of the precipitation of moisture from the barrel.
So you choose what barrel you want according to...
Whatever
how many
the
vintages
coming in, and yeah, and the fruit, and we try to pair it up with barrels that we think are going to accentuate.
So,
that
did you
year.
Taste the fruit to know, like, okay?
Taste the fruit. We also taste the raw wine, which is always horrible. But you've got to make a call because it's got to get in somewhere and begin the aging process. So, you know, you use past year's experience, but every year is a new challenge, new adventure.
So, Peggy, I think we're doing really good on terminology.
Yes, we picked up a lot of terms.
But my terminology is not as polite, apparently.
Right. Extracted.
I know. Extraction
term.
Is a good word.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So when you smell the aromas on this, it's changed from the vignette that we had just a moment ago where we picked up the apple or the citrus right on the note.
Note the word aroma versus smell.
Yeah. Or stink.
Yeah. Oh. You know, just...
And then do the same thing with the taste. Hold it in your mouth and let it really swish around in your mouth.
So this is probably going to have a different perception in the mouth. A little less acidic.
Mm.
It's the exact same pH, but the barrel puts a roundness on the back end that makes it a little bit softer.
Nancy, no jokes.
So the other one had that kind of peach and at the end, and you picked up, what was that on the end you had on the other one?
Lemon. My own citrus.
That's right. This doesn't have that citrusy. It is definitely rounder on the finish, a little softer on the finish.
Mm.
It doesn't, I don't think the crab apple is in it anymore.
Mm-mm.
It's calmer.
I'm getting a lot more spice out of this. I'm getting some actually like maybe baked apple in the nose on this one. A little bit of brown sugar.
But it's amazing, and that's the fun thing about winemaking.
Mm-hmm.
Same grapes. Taste
different.
Totally different. Depending on how you, what vessel you put it in. It changes.
And what about like sunlight and the weather changing the taste of the grapes, the harvest?
Oh, absolutely.
So every year we try to determine what they gave us out there.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
And that's based on the weather. It's based on the temperatures. Mm. It's based on when it rained or didn't rain. It's based on the maturity of the vine. Each vine gets a year older every year, so it changes a little bit.
Mm.
So every year we have to reevaluate what's coming out of there because it's different every year. And then my job is to try to make that fruit that I had a big hand in growing, but no control over what it tastes like.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. And then my job is to make sure it's as good as we can make it.
This is like, okay, so in South Africa we would make pawpaw salad.
Oh, boy.
It sounds weird. But it's papaya, I suppose, here. Like, it's similar to papaya.
Uh-huh.
Because it doesn't have quite the melon thing to me. But we would put citrus on the pawpaw to me. Papaya.
We haven't had too many glasses.
No, I'm quite happy. But I'm stuck in two different languages on my head. But the papaya, so... You would put, and the interesting thing in a lot of different Indian cultures and stuff, they would put, and it's something I do, like if I have a cantaloupe or something, is I put black pepper on the cantaloupe, which is better for your digestion, and it has this whole other flavor profile. Like in Mexico, they put like a tamian, the spice, on like mango, like the red spice.
Okay.
And so that is what this is to me. It's like the pawpaw salad. With a little bit, it's like a little lime juice. It's not even like orangey lime. Like you could do whatever you wanted accordingly.
Yeah.
And a little bit of spice. Like I would not even, it's not even black pepper. And it would be like a subtle, there's a little kick to it. That's maybe not even cinnamon, but kind of like cinnamon, but not. I don't, all I know is it tastes like that salad, which is a very popular
interesting
dish that people would bring to barbecues.
Uh-huh.
You'd go in your backyard if you didn't go to the store.
How long has it been since you had that salad?
26, 30 years.
That's how strong your sense of taste and smell is.
Yeah.
Something like this can bring you back to that moment.
Because I was sitting and you're going, you're going like this, going, I'm going, I cannot place this, but I know this. Mm-hmm. But I can't place it. It's pawpaw salad. I can even see the black seeds of the
Wonderful.
And it's weird because if you were going to a friend's house, they're like, "Hey, we're having a barbecue," which would be a braai over there. And you're like, well, I don't have time to go to the store. Maybe back in those days, the stores were open at certain times. You go in your backyard because everybody had a mango tree, an avocado tree, and a pawpaw tree. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what every house came with, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Because I was starting to go into mango, too. So I would eat green mangoes as a kid, which Nancy would say, don't. You're going to get, you know, that's not good. But they are good. So it's also got a green mango before the mango has that smell, that pungency. There's like a mango smell when it's ripe, and you can smell the nectar on the outside of it before you eat it. So it's a, like a green mango right before it's ripe. They're delicious.
I need to, when I write the description of this wine, I'm going to be thinking of you.
Green bananas.
I used mango earlier.
Yeah,
mango, yeah. And even green banana, kind of like a plantain.
Take a sip of this, Kurt, and you tell me what you're picking up in this. Because it is interesting. It's so different than the first one.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost got even more minerality.
Yeah, it's
the more I drink it.
Yeah, and it should. I mean, it shouldn't have more because of the oak, but it appears.
It makes me feel happy. Maybe it is.
And
sense
we want
memory.
To make you happy.
Absolutely. I am. LDV Winery makes
make
everyone
happy. Yep. Okay.
It's livelier.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It is. It's got.
I
it's,
think it.
It's got character.
It brought out. I'm getting some really nice citrus on the back end, like candied lime.
See, that's what the pawpaw does.
Is it? Okay.
Because a pawpaw is not like a cantaloupe is a cantaloupe, right?
Right.
Pawpaw is like, it's like a mushroom, and you do whatever to the pawpaw to make it.
It picks it up.
I felt like the nose on the first one was pretty straight line, and that kind of went through the entire glass. This one's got some layers to it that I think the oak accentuated, plus the concentration.
And then it gets sweeter the more you drink it.
This is so much fun. And I want to do more and more of
and
this.
And also the French oak, good you picked that up, because the French oak will often give you a perception of sweetness that's not there.
Ah.
But it's fooling your palate. So you're like, well, this is really sweet. No, it's the same sugar as the one you just had.
Yeah.
But it's just hitting you different.
Huh. And all of our wines are zero residual sugar. Yeah. So we ferment down to zero. And so that sweetness you might be picking up, it's either fruit, actually, rather than sweetness, or it's, like Kurt says, the barrel in cooling your taste buds.
Okay, because I was going to say the barrel, because I taste like a woody finish.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Yeah, there's like
a little
wood.
Bit of smokiness to it, yeah.
But it's like, it's kind of, have you ever, like, harvested sugarcane and cut it and eaten it?
No.
So, like, the inside of a sugarcane.
Wow.
Like it's kind of so that's kind of, it's kind of like, well, it's.
See, this is great conversation. Just think about it. Think about what we talked about the first wine. By adding a different technique of aging, we've opened up a whole new conversation.
Yeah. All new different set of fruits
because
and things.
Yep. If you didn't spices, tell us it woods. Was the same wine.
You would
we
think
would
it's a
never
different,
know. We would
correct.
Think it would
right.
Be,
you think, well, this
it's
is
a different wine.
This is from California.
Or this is a different grape.
No, it's from the same it's spot the one you just had.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, I wouldn't know if it was Viognier or not because I'm not like, it's like, I like an album, but I won't remember each name of the song, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, so to me, this is just incredibly good white wine. So can you bottle it up now?
Yeah.
Does it have, how long do we have to wait?
Probably late spring.
Oh, so that's not so
it's
bad.
Getting close.
Yeah, it'll get there. Depending on, you know, what we find out today, and then we'll do a tasting panel.
So it'll change again.
Yeah, we'll do several more iterations of what I'll do is I synthesize Peggy's input, your input, our tasting panel's input. I'll come up with several different options. Because the options now are infinitesimal. And so I've got to narrow it down so we've got something we can get our brains around.
Yeah, sure.
When can I come, like, help?
We can let you know.
Come,
well, you know what's fun is for, like, our wine club members who come to visit, and they may actually be on the crush pad when the fruit comes in. And then 2 years later, they get to taste that
what
fruit.
What they were part of.
And then they get to, and then down the road, they get to have a bottle of it.
Yeah.
And they were part of it.
They were there from the beginning.
So talk about experiences, which is something we all want in life.
Absolutely.
Especially after COVID, I think a lot of us realized experience, and people are investing in experiences, like weddings are getting smaller and honeymoons are getting bigger kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that is something for wine club members. It's like, no, I want to be part of the experience, because Lord knows, starting a winery, 15 years, like, be a wine club member.
Exactly. I always tell people, you don't want to own a winery, but you want to know someone that owns a winery.
Right.
So you can enjoy it, be a part of it, do as much work as you want. You don't have to pay for it, and you get to go home. Just like, don't have kids, or be a grandma and take care of your kids,
it.
You send them home. But it's a lot of fun. And so what I'll do is make sure I send you a couple of bottles wherever you are of these, and we can talk about it once
follow
the
up.
Bottle.
Oh, cool.
So remember this, put this.
Okay, hey, listen, we're going to have to do a transcript on this for this podcast.
Yes.
So we can see this conversation.
Remember what you're tasting now, and then come the spring, we'll open up the bottle that we finally put in the bottle.
Hey, we'll be back here in summer. I'm just saying.
Okay, there you go.
Man, this is exciting to just the different. I think it's fascinating. It's a science, but it's an art.
It is.
Well, it's even, after 15 years, it's still fascinating to me. Like, what's going to happen?
Well,
I don't know.
It's chemistry.
I can make educated guesses and say this reminds me of 2015, but then it doesn't. So it's an adventure for me too, because I'm tasting this for the first time ever.
What I like about you is like you've got attention to detail and everything with this, and obviously is doing the actual viticulture yourself, like doing the actual growing, the whole process, right? But there's something about understanding to not you've got microclimates, but you're not micromanaging the grapes.
Correct.
And you're letting nature do what nature wants. And co-creating, basically, versus being the boss of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
you can't be.
Yes.
Right.
You learn, the old creed, learn to control what you can and not what you can't.
So in other words, we only can do self-control.
Right.
Yeah.
So our winemaking style is not to replicate what we did last year, but to honor the grapes that we harvest each vintage. And as Kurt said earlier, grow great fruit in the vineyard, and then once it comes to the winery, we just want to celebrate that grape.
And that's why Peggy goes down through the vineyard and talks to all the grapes. Mm-hmm. All right, I want to go back to this before we go to the next thievery. Okay. There's a banned thievery corporation. I think we should name a label of this. But so you were talking about cinnamon. I was going, there's a spice. The front end and the back end.
Okay.
For someone who's never tasted wine yet, can you explain the front and the back end? Because you don't want me to explain that already, Kurt. You know that.
Everybody's palate's different, but the typical anatomy of the palate is what we call the front palate, is the tip of your tongue and your lips and all those part of the organ that's in the front of your mouth. There's also what's called a mid palate. And that's where a majority of your acid receptors are. They're on the side of your tongue.
Okay.
That's why you don't want to let the wine roll back, because the front palate's going to hit you one way, then it's going to hit the mid palate, it's going to talk to you somewhere else, and then it's going to hit the back palate, which is right before you swallow. And all three of those regions will pick up different things in the wine if you let them. If you just guzzle it,
no,
you won't get it. But if you let it roll back and give you the entire experience, hopefully you may be able to pick up front, mid, and back palate on the wine.
Because right now I can feel it's like my tongue is a little lively right now.
And that's
I'm having a party in my mouth.
There you go. That's what we want to create.
That's what's called the finish. How long is that wine still with you after it's been swallowed?
Like a song that's an earworm. That you just keep hearing in your head all the time?
I never heard that term. That's interesting.
Earworm? That's when a song doesn't stop.
Earwig, but not earworm.
No, we don't need to go in the wiggy department. But we do call wine wiggy.
Yeah.
So, because you know what? We call it wiggy butt. So your first glass of wine, you take your sip. You've had a long day in the vineyard.
Right.
You come back, You pour yourself a nice glass of wine, you take a sip, slow down, and then you take your next sip and it starts to go down. You can feel it go through your body and it gets to your tail feathers, and then you wiggy butt.
Ah.
So wiggy.
Like a duck getting out of the water, right?
Yeah, and so it's code name for whenever we're somewhere, we go, hey, let's have some wiggy, and nobody knows what we're talking about, and then they can't tell. You know, we like our stealth wine tasting wherever we want.
I love that. I love that.
All right, so we're back to tasting number three of the same Viognier, but now in a different barrel.
Yeah, this has been aging a year in new French oak. So remember I talked about the shoe. This is the new shoe. This is
brand
the
first, new shoe.
First time it's ever had wine in this barrel, so it's going to have more characteristics of the cooperage or tonnelier, and also the wood forest it came from. And because it's new, it's going to have more of those flavors and nuance into the wine.
And oh my goodness, the aroma changed dramatically.
Oh yeah.
Because of that. So you're getting some of that oakiness even in the nose.
Yeah, really, big time.
A little
like
woodsy.
The nose. Yeah, that's. So you know what forest, so do you choose who you get your barrels from?
Yeah, there are two forests in France that we source from.
Oh, wow.
And then there are five in the United States we source our oak from.
Oh, wow.
And because of their terroir, they have very different characteristics in the barrel. So we try to match those up as well as French versus American versus neutral, and then where the barrel was grown.
Because I think we've talked about this maybe in the past, I don't recall, but if the oak is from a northern state versus a southern state, because of that terroir, it's going to be very different and then impart very different flavors because
and intensities.
Intensities.
Yeah.
So, okay, I understand going, you know, how many the different vintages and how many it's had through the barrel, and then you're choosing your barrel from the different places you're talking about. But do you have kind of like a, this is going to be this kind of flavor barrel? Like, do you know the taste of the barrel? That sounds weird, but...
No.
Yeah, no, that's a legitimate question. Over time, we're gravitating based on what's coming out of the vineyard every year. We're starting to gravitate towards some patterns.
Okay.
So we know that, you know, we've tried the Syrah in French oak and American oak. We've tried Petite Syrah in French oak and American oak. We've decided that American oak's better for both of those to this point.
Huh.
Maybe that will change, but as a rule, I've gravitated towards that pattern the last few years.
Do you keep a journal on what happens on the winery every day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Not every day.
Not every day, but definitely, because it evolves.
Yeah.
The grapes evolve, the wine evolves. This, I don't know if you've tasted it yet, it is really... full in the mouth.
It is.
Right? And this is more what I would consider a Chardonnay style. That it has, you get a little bit of the butteriness.
I was going to say,
It's very creamy. And it's the smooth from the front to the back.
I like it.
I do too. This is really...
This is quite yummy. And it's got a little caramel.
This is a drink by itself kind of wine, but it also would be a great food wine.
Listen, my wine, I'm taking by my own and running for the hills. I'm going to that forest in France. It's mine, all mine. No, I'm kidding.
But
wine is best with friends.
It is amazing how that different kind of oak just imparted so much flavor. And again, same fruit, same year.
That's amazing.
It, you know, that's, I remember
so you
a
could
long
put
time
out
ago,
different,
my grandmother
you'd,
telling
you could
me,
say, okay, I'm going to do three...
Cake,
different
Viognier.
We might do a Viognier just to this.
Okay.
Because
and toss
it
the
will
others?
Taste like plastic.
No, then we'll make a different Viognier out of the second.
Oh, okay.
And a different Viognier out of the first.
Preferably
or we might put them together.
I was going to say you could blend them.
Yep. That's the whole...
That is why we're tasting it now.
That's the phase we're getting into now. Is do we want this wine to be different than it is just like this? Or do we like it the way it is?
Or you could do like a limited edition.
If we put it with some other barrels, will they play well together? Because sometimes
like
you think,
children.
Boy, if I add A and B, it's going to be an amazing C. But sometimes B is like, it ruined A.
Oh, not
And you don't know until you put it together.
Until you try.
Yeah, you think,
So that's why we taste these wines on their own, straight out of the barrel or out of the container. So we know what the original profile is of the juice in each of those vessels. And then our winemaking blending style is exactly what Kurt kind of explained. It's still Vignier. We're not mixing a different kind of grape into it. It's still Vignier. But our blending will be, you know, let's do 70% of this in the new French oak and blend it with 30% in the
older one,
the Vignier that was in a older oak,
or
mixed with the stainless steel.
Oh wow!
You know, so see what that tastes. So that's when Kurt and I sit down and begin to fine tune what we're actually going to put in the bottle by taste testing a lot of different formulas, basically.
Wow. Sounds like fun to me.
That's hard work.
Yeah, but it is like knowing, like, so going back to music, it's like, you know, knowing what songs to put on an album, because it's like a band goes out, they have a set list that they're going to generally play for at a show.
Uh-huh.
But when you do an album, like, that's it. At some point, you've got to stop.
And that's with me. Peggy's my partner in this completely, but one person has to make the final call. I don't think you can make good wine with a democracy. Mm. You can create options with a democracy, but there has to be one person that says, I know this better than anybody else. Thanks all for your input. This is where we're going.
Oh.
And we are almost lockstep in that. We've only had a couple of...
Only one in 15 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
The winemaking that we disagree, and Kurt's the winemaker, and he got the final decision.
And look at her look at you right
now. Yeah, it's like his fault.
And it turned out I was absolutely right.
Yes. But, well, that's the same in our industry, you know, publishing. No, yeah. I want this front cover. No, I want that. And then we look and go, no. No, but it is interesting because even if you agree or disagree, it's still whatever happens, because once it goes out to the public, it's to the public.
Yeah, it's out there. It's out there.
You know?
So I'm getting a little green banana off of this.
Green banana.
We're back to the green bananas again.
Mm.
Priscilla's here. That's why.
Real faint in the back. Not after I drank it, but right now.
It's a fun wine. Now, this, we have a new label called Rhyolite. And I don't know, we have to decide what label we put this on. Do we want it our blue label, which is Sky Island, which would have been the first one, because all of our Sky Island wines don't have any oak influence. They're just the grape expression. Or our gold, our white label, Vignier, could be a mixture of oak and stainless steel. And then we have our new label, which is our Rhyolite White, and that is something we feel is extraordinary. If it's distinctive enough, whatever we decide, to put a Rhyolite White label on it.
Oh,
so
cool.
We can be making three different wines out of the same juice from 2022.
So you understand the blend concept.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because you can. And then it's like, oh, maybe we'll just do another one.
Yeah,
a new
or
label.
Maybe we only do one, you know, and we just have a lot of it. But so those are the decisions we have to make between now and the spring in order to bottle it and get it ready for the market.
So all the bottling is done here on property?
Yeah, everything's done here. We touch every grape, every vine, and every bottle we are in control over.
It's so nice to have something American made, too.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I'm just saying there's something we should also look at in regards to supporting small business that is American small business, you know, because so much of our stuff in life, including produce and things like that, which I'm not against, it's nice to support local, and I mean local, Arizona local, and then, you know, nationally.
Yeah, the only thing we have to buy that's foreign made is our bottles.
Mm. Oh, okay.
The United States glass industry has gotten out of making bottles.
What?
I don't know why, but we cannot buy.
Because they're recyclable.
Buy. So it's either Mexico or China.
Oh, there's
well,
a lot of things.
But you got to have the bottles.
Yeah.
So you buy it, and
so
you, and you buy them.
Your cork comes from
there. There's a lot of things
also
like that we don't make anymore.
Well, the cork is is harvested in usually Spain.
Or Portugal.
Or Portugal, but they're made here in the United States.
Nancy, put a cork in it.
Yeah. Bend over.
Yep.
Cornhole.
Yep. But, you know, the bottling during COVID, we couldn't even get glass. We were lucky because we ordered early, and we had to get a whole semi-truck of glass. Because they wouldn't, and for a small winery, that was a lot of glass to purchase. But we were able to get it.
Not just financially, but space.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say.
That's a lot of
You better start bottling quick, you know.
Well, we've used it all, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's good.
We went through it, but it took a year.
Wow.
To go through all that glass, but a lot of wineries were hurting because they couldn't find glass during COVID.
That's when you start saying, I'll sell it to you for a quadruple.
Well, they kept calling.
Well, that's the thing. You guys do actually work together as wineries as well.
We do.
How many wineries do you think Arizona has as a whole?
I think the number is close to 130 now.
Really?
Yeah. And when we started 15, a little over 15 years ago, we were licensed like number 17, 18, something like that in the state.
Wow.
And now there's over 130. They're not all producing. You know, they have the license. They can start producing, but they're not necessarily. But it's a fast-growing industry in Arizona, and like a lot of states. But in Arizona, it's really fast growing, and and it's coming into its own, you know.
Exciting.
Our grapes have really started to mature, and they're picking up a lot of nuances of flavor, and we're really excited about it.
So that's part of why you keep that root and do the grafts. So the vines are growing with the seasons.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And just like all plants, they're going deeper. The roots are going deeper in the ground and picking up different nuances.
They're extracting new minerals.
Yes.
I said the extraction.
Yes.
But now with that, what I also want to think it's interesting, you're celebrating 15 years. So that's a huge achievement as a small business and as a winery and doing agriculture, right?
Right.
So all of that. But how much do you feel like in regards to you're part of the legacy of a burgeoning industry in Arizona?
Yeah, we're the pioneers.
That's awesome.
I mean, when you think about it, 10 years from now, we're going to double that number probably of wineries or who knows, more. And we were here first. And our goal with our winery is that we're not going to always be here eventually either because we don't. Someone else is going to be producing LDV wine or producing wine from this location. Our goal is to make sure it lasts the next 100 years, that we take such good care of our soils and of the vines that it will outlive us. And so we're setting up a legacy for wine grape growing and winemaking at this location.
And how do you feel about that, Kurt, in regards to being one of the first people coming out saying, okay, I'm going to make wine? Is there a neighbor out there? Yo! With the big echo in the canyon.
You got to get into a silo because you can get very confused based on what everybody else is doing because they're not doing it here.
Oh, okay.
And, but, you know, our goal was to make different Arizona wines. Mm-hmm. That's why we chose this spot. We are big, flavorful, full-bodied wine lovers. Nothing. I don't like anything that's sneaking up on me. I want to get hit in the mouth. and so we weren't sure because we'd never tasted an Arizona wine that did that for us. So we didn't know if it was possible. I think we've proven it is possible to make a blockbuster red wine from Southeast Arizona.
Wow.
And I'm hoping that is kind of the legacy. It's higher risk. It's more expensive, and it's not for everybody, but I hope that other winemakers in Arizona realize that we've got a piece of ground here that can make some big, really expressive wines.
Nice.
I mean, this is a big Viognier.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is as powerful as a Napa Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I wish more people were doing that, letting this place do what it wants to do instead of restraining it or constraining it to fit some other profile.
Oh yeah, and it's the same with us in the magazine, Nancy. The first thing we did all our market research and when we first started and went to people that you're supposed to go to, oh well, who needs another magazine? And Nancy and I looked at each other. oh, that's on. Game on.
Game on.
Game on. And it is a risk, and you're supposed to fit into these boxes. And none of us, you know, I think it's part of the entrepreneurial spirit. And so, Nancy, wouldn't you say what they're talking about with risk? It's risk, because it's huge.
But if you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Exactly. And, even if you fall down, get back up.
That's right.
You know, and it's like, I would rather be true to what is inside you to do in your beliefs and the art of it than to live up to what the typical expectation, you know, cross the T, dot the I, you're supposed to fit into this box, because that's what we've decided.
And I want people to understand or begin to appreciate that every place will produce a different wine. Mm-hmm. So if you are in the Finger Lakes area of New York and you're tasting a Viognier there, and they come to Arizona to us and taste our Viognier, it's going to be very different. It's going to taste different. The profile will be different, not only because the winemakers are different, but because the grapes are grown in a different location.
I just got your bananas.
That's what makes it so exciting.
I just got the green banana.
Yeah.
Did you?
I did. It's the only way I like bananas.
It sneaks up on you.
That or banana bread. That's it. All of a sudden, I just went, I got the banana.
Isn't it exciting?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the fun thing about wine grapes. When you ferment them and process them, they taste like anything but a grape.
Yeah.
And when you ferment apples or you ferment cherries, they're going to taste like cherry or apple. But a wine grape will taste like all different kinds of things.
And you don't have to have weird textured fruit.
No, you don't.
You know what I mean? Like, you get that apple and it's like, you know, so this is good. I'm going for the wine version.
Fun.
Me too.
Fun.
Yeah. Cool. So everyone should know the website, ldvwinery.com, and 15 years. So congratulations, you guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for the information, really. The experience of it's learning, you know. I agree about the land here. It's sacred land that you're on. And I think there's something that comes through in the glasses of wine that we've enjoyed, is that it's something special, and to do it right. And in closing, I had this question earlier, and I just need to go back to it, is I want people to understand that farmers do care about water. And it's something we do need to bring up, because there's belief until you actually go to where things are being grown and actually go and visit and understand. Farmers do care about water.
Absolutely.
Right? But out in the desert, so people are like, oh, you're going to suck up all the desert water. Aren't vineyards pretty hardy in regards to the amount of water they need compared to some crops?
The value of the wine grape compared to its water usage is off the charts. The vineyard takes very little water, one, because we drip irrigate. So we're not irrigating land that's not contributing to the vine. We're dripping right on that vine, so there's no waste. And so the grapes are very efficient. We are on the largest closed aquifer in the state of Arizona. And our water table's actually gone up a little bit since we started this. But you're always concerned about water, because the one thing I'm sure about, I can't pick up and move that vineyard. And so that vineyard had better be sustainable from a water standpoint, way, way, way beyond where we'll ever be. So that was one of our first evaluation points when we were looking for a site for our investment. And it's an investment because it's stuck here. So water is very, very important. They grow a lot of... Arizona is a huge agricultural state. And it grows some of the best produce and fiber products in the planet. But some of them are very high water use. And the city of Phoenix actually uses less water now than it did when it was 100,000 people, and it's 5 million now, because they've transitioned from cotton and those very, very high water crops to housing.
Oh.
And they use less water than a cotton plant.
Wow. And vineyards are good.
Vineyards are low water use crop. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that wine grapes originated in Persia, which is desert. And so we believe, you know, it's time that it's come back to the desert. And it's a very efficient crop. And we manage our water. It's very sophisticated, and we manage it very effectively. So.
Well, you guys are very sustainable.
Cool. Correct.
And also vegan.
Yeah.
That's something people should know as well. So again, everyone, LDV Winery, thank you so much. Thank you for dinner. Thank you for the wine tasting experience and for the fun.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio's Wine Time with Peggy show. Keep up with LDV Winery at ldvwinery.com. Keep up with Big Blend Radio at bigblendradio.com.